listening to member-supported WBGO Newark 88.3 FM online at WBGO.org. I'm Sheila Anderson, and this is Weekend Jazz After Hours, the Salon Sessions Hour. And I am thrilled to have with me A.T.N. Charles. He is Assistant Professor of Jazz Studies in Michigan State. He's a recording artist and arranger and a whole lot of things, a lot of good things. And we've been trying to make this happen for a long time. Welcome, my friend.
Thank you for having me, Sheila. Yes. It is great to be here.
Thank you. And I'm excited you'll be joining us at Jazz in the Garden this summer.
I'm really excited
I'm excited. So let's just jump into this, because your new CD is Carnival, The Sound of a People, Volume 1, which means there's another volume coming, which is fantastic. Talk about it. Now, the song that we just heard opened up with Steel, and you talk about it, because I really think this is a fantastic recording, and you've been doing, you know, concepts for the most part. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah. So, thanks for playing that track. Steel is the final movement of a suite within this piece. The suite is called Black Echo, and Black Echo is a piece that I wrote specifically about the evolution of our sound in Trinidad and Tobago. The whole album was inspired by all of these different sounds that we have during Carnival. The sounds of the bamboo, the sounds of the iron, the sounds of the, well, the next volume will have the sounds of the whips of the jab jab, but the sound of the biscuit tin of the jab malasi, the sound of the calendar drums. And so Black Echo was about how that sound evolved from the initial banning of the drums in 1884. The British colonial government decided that they were going to ban drumming in Trinidad. They banned African drums, and as a result, the Africans in Trinidad decided, well, if they couldn't play drums, because the drum had a skin, so that was the law, so they decided to start playing on bamboo. So we went from the banning of the drums. The next movement is the evolution to bamboo. And then from bamboo, they evolved into iron, beaten on chassis of cars and brake drums, etc. And then from that, those iron bands were these huge gangs that would go around. And a gentleman named Spree Simon, who was one of a few musicians who kind of developed the sound of the steel pan. And so we went from not being able to play anything to having a full orchestra. You know, and so that whole piece is about the evolution, and the final piece is what we just heard, which is Steel.
Wow. Well, let's start at the beginning. This was, you were commissioned a Guggenheim Fellowship, right? Is that correct?
That is correct.
Right. So you traveled around your homeland, and something I thought was interesting says, at your liner notes, recordings of some of the richest traditions of Carnival that inspired your compositions. Now, I'd never really thought about the history of carnivals. And then you also write a song about the oldest forms of mass, which is what? So, I mean, I the history is fascinating. I think it gets lost because we just get so wrapped up into the celebrations
into the euphoria.
All that. Yeah, yeah. So, you know, just talk about, you know, carnivals and just the whole, the history of it. And
well, in Trinidad and Tobago, which this album is specifically inspired by and drawing very heavily from the traditions of Trinidad and Tobago's carnival. And so our carnival history is very vast, and it goes back to the days of African enslavement in the Caribbean. And so at the core, our modern carnival in Trinidad is a celebration of our emancipation from enslavement. So a lot of the older characters, or what we call old mass characters, are normally characters that will remind you or tell you a story of something that used to happen during enslavement. And so at the core, from doing my research to write this piece, I kind of realized that Carnival is really, in Trinidad and Tobago, it's a dialogue between a society and its past, and also a society and its present at the same time. And specifically through the costume mask, I'll give you an example. So Jab Malassi, which is the first track on the album. Jab Malassi, the folklore of Jab Malassi is that it's the vengeful spirit of a slave who met his doom in a vat of boiling molasses, which was one of the ways that the French used to torture their slaves. And so this character portrays an evil spirit. The people who portray this character are some of the greatest people I know. It's almost like they become superheroes, and the way that they transform is by hearing the sound of the biscuit tin. So when they hear that, they immediately, their eyes open a certain way, and they start screaming a certain way, and they start moving their head a certain way, because they immediately transform due to the sound of that music. And so through that, we're still remembering our history, which is the most important thing that a society can do. So like in this history of this music that we know as jazz, right? So like anytime I play my trumpet, I think about Louis Armstrong, naturally, simply because that's the lineage. He is my musical ancestor. He's my musical forefather. And so with Carnival, it's very similar. And so Jab Malassi is one example of that. The Bois, or the Stick Fight, which is, I think that's track four on the album. That is a very important ritual in Carnival, because without the Stick Fight, we wouldn't have Carnival today. Because the modern Carnival was a result of a fight that happened between, a big clash that happened between the British colonial police and the Stick Fighters. It happened in Port of Spain on Juve morning, very, very early Carnival Monday morning. And this was in 1881. It was known today as the Cambouli Riots. And because of that, the British governor at the time said, okay, look, y'all get these 2 days to do whatever you want in the street, and then at midnight, you have to stop and go back to your regular. And so that was how the modern Carnival was born.
I didn't know that.
Specifically to do it with Trinidad and Tobago. I'm not familiar with everywhere else. But for us, that's how it came about. And so that's why I wrote that piece. And I was like, you know, I need to channel it. So I went to the studio in Trinidad and I recorded some bois drummers. They have all these different songs that they sing. That's the roots of Calypso as well. The bois songs, the calendar songs, as they're also known. And normally it was a chanteur who's the leader, and then the chorus, they sing the La Voix, and that is where Calypso came out of. That's the birth of Calypso, is that style of call and response. So I wanted to channel all that into a song as well. So it was, all of these different things went into the albums, a lot of research, a lot of composition, a lot of hanging out with all these different musicians in Trinidad. I sat down with them, I recorded them, I recorded video of them, interviewed them. We ate food, we drank rum, we drank every type of liquor known to man. We drank beer on the street. Most of the recording sessions you hear on the album were on the streets in Trinidad and Tobago.
That's incredible. How long did you work on it before?
The first The first session in Trinidad happened in November 2015.
Uh-huh.
And then we recorded again in January. Did some sessions in January. And then I started recording my band in New York in August of 2016.
Now, you've had some of the same guys in your bands. Obed and
Ben Williams, Solomon Fortner, Lucas Curtis. That's kind of like my family, you know. Now,
what is it about them that makes your band so cohesive? What about
groove?
Yeah,
the understanding that this is dance music. Understanding that Lucas, everybody has a link to either the Caribbean or like a Gullah tradition. You know, Sullivan's from New Orleans. Lucas is Puerto Rican, and he's of Puerto Rican and Saint Martinian descent.
Mm-hmm.
Obed's Haitian American.
Right.
You could go down to James Francis, from Houston with Louisiana roots. Brian Hogan's from Georgia, but a really strong connection to the Caribbean. Somehow, I don't understand why. David Sanchez on tenor saxophone. Yeah. From Puerto Rico, Godwin Louis from Connecticut, but with Haitian roots. And so, you know, the musicians on the album, for me, what I love about the way they play and why we've done so many albums together is because, one, they understand the importance of the groove and they understand the connection of the folk element of the music, and that the music is supposed to transform people into another place. You know, you see it with very spiritual music. When I listen to Wyclef's music,
yes.
You know, I listen to Wyclef Gordon's music, always takes you to that place. It takes you to church. Same with Marcus Roberts. He goes there always. He'll always get to the church. And we also try to do that. We also try to take you to that place.
Well, take us to Clark Terry and how big of an influence he was on you. Talk about Clark. We're going to hear Clark Terry with Paul Gonzalez in a moment, but he was something else.
So Clark Terry was a very, very special person, musician, mentor to many. I met Clark, I was a freshman in college. I was in New York for spring break.
Now you went to
Florida State. And I used to come to New York every vacation to try to go to the jam sessions and meet musicians and try to, you know, see what's going on, see who's popping. And I was going to Boston to visit some friends at Berkeley. And so I was at LaGuardia Airport to hop on the Delta shuttle.
Oh, I remember those days.
Yep, the Marine Air Terminal.
Yes.
And there was this gentleman, he was in a wheelchair. And there was somebody with him with a trumpet case. And I looked at him and I was like, you know, and I was remembering the album covers that I had. And I said, well, you know, that looks like Clark Terry. And so I walked up to him after we cleared security. And I said, excuse me, sir. Hate to bother you. Good morning. It was early. It was like 6 o'clock in the morning. He said, I said, are you Clark Terry? And he said, well, yes, I am. And I was like, well, it's a pleasure to meet you. My name is Etienne. I'm a trumpet player as well. He said, ooh. He said, do you know how to circle the breeze? I said, no, I don't. He said, ooh, sit down. So I sat down right next to him there. And right there in that airport, in the terminal at LaGuardia, Clark Terry taught me how to circle the breeze. And he taught me the basics of doodle tonguing. And
taught you the what?
The basics of doodle tonguing, which is a type of articulation that Clark and Clifford Brown used to do.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I didn't know it had the name.
And so right there, he showed me how to circular breathe. And he gave me his number, and we kept in touch since then. You know, when he moved to Pine Bluff, Arkansas, with Gwen, I took two students down from Michigan.
Nice.
We drove. It was a 13-hour drive. I'll never forget. We tried to drive to St. Louis, and then and we went. And we spent 2 days with him. It was like a 2-day-long lesson. And my students were there playing, and I was just playing piano for them. And it was just very special. And he was. You know, I got to hang out with him at Juilliard. We gave him the Juilliard Medal. The concert we did called the Legends of Jazz. And, he was like that with everybody. You know, he mentored Quincy Jones. I mean, if you think about Clark Terry mentored Miles Davis, Quincy Jones, right? He mentored Diane Reeves.
Yeah.
You know, he mentored Ingrid Jensen. You know, he mentored so many different musicians. And if you look at just the first two, he mentored Miles and Q. Like, who more influenced black modern music in the 20th century than those two people?
Right.
You think about Miles Davis, how many times he changed the music. You think about Quincy Jones with respect to what he did for Basie and Sinatra and what he did for Michael Jackson. And you go down the list of the work that Quincy Jones and all that. He was going to lessons at Clark Terry's hotel room every morning in Seattle.
Yeah.
So, you know, like every time I listen to Clark recordings of CT, I think of all of the things that he did for everybody that crossed paths with him.
Right. And he influenced you. So we're going to take a listen to Clark Terry and Paul Gonzalez, and then we're going to follow it with Roberta Flack, because we're going to talk about Roberta Flack on the other side. On WBGO Newark and WBGO.org, I'm Sheila Anderson. He's ATN Charles, and this is Salon Sessions. Roberta Flack, first take from her 1969 recording. And Donny Hathaway wrote the song First Take. And ATN Charles is my guest here. I'm Sheila Anderson. And we were talking about this, and he was reminding me that she went to school with Donny Hathaway. Just talk about what you were saying about Roberta. Because I knew she taught school.
She was a school teacher. And, she was
a right, but teacher. I thought, I didn't realize that she was gigging at night to, you know, make some money.
Yeah, I mean, back then, you know, we're talking about, you know, back then she told me straight. She said that as a black woman, her salary was a fraction of her white male counterparts. And so, you know, playing gigs was necessary to supplement her income.
Now, had she planned on being a musician, or she was just?
She was always a great musician,
like a working.
She had planned on going to grad school. She graduated Howard at 19 years old.
I didn't know that.
And
either.
She had planned on going to grad school to continue her musical studies, but then I think one of her parents passed away suddenly, and so she had to get a job. So I think her first job teaching, first one was in North Carolina, and then I think she moved over to D.C. Where Les McCann heard her playing at that club. And that rest is history.
Right. So how long did you work with her? At what point did you work with Roberta?
I met Roberta Flack first in 2005. I was a senior at Florida State. And 2005 into 2006 was kind of crazy because I met Roberta and Ralph McDonald in the space of a week of each other, and so it was November 2005. I was playing in Trinidad. There used to be a festival there called the Trinidad and Tobago Steel Pan Jazz Festival, put on by the QRC Foundation, and I was playing with a steel pan player named Ray Harmon, who was my Spanish teacher in high school, and he had kind of started hearing about me, you know, studying music and playing. And so they flew me in to play in his group. And then a really good friend of mine, Turo Tappan, was a great saxophonist from Barbados. He was in Roberta Flack's touring band for many years. And they were playing at a club in Trinidad the Thursday night. I went to pick him up at a hotel to take him. He was a vegetarian. He's a vegetarian. So I was taking him to the vegetarian restaurants. And so he said, come inside and meet Miss Flack. So I parked the car and walk inside, and you know, we're inside the hotel and we're by the pool. At the time it was the Crown Plaza. And she came out, she had come out from the gym. And so I said, this is ETN, he's a trumpet player. And we met and we shook hands. And she said, nice to meet you. And we walked off. And then, so then I took him to his sound check. And so at the sound check, they were doing their sound check. And he introduced me to some of the other musicians in the band. And he introduced me to the musical director, a gentleman by the name of Rick Jordan, Ricardo Jordan, who was the drummer in the band and sang backup vocals. So Arturo was kind of lobbying for me to get to kind of sit in on, of the tunes, right? I wasn't pushing myself up. I was just kind of his driver for the day. And he taught me this. He said, like, yo, grab your horn. Let me show you this horn line. So he taught me. So he showed me this horn. So we do this. 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 So we played, and then we played it for Rick, and Rick was like, yeah, that's popping. We're going to do that tonight. So they told me to wear black, and that song is Back Together Again.
Yes, yes.
And so show up at the club, you know. So they're playing. She does all her hits. First Time I Saw Your Face, you know, Where's the Love, and... Killing Me Softly, she's going all, you know, she has so many hits, right?
Yeah.
And then she's finished, and then she comes on to do this encore, and the encore is Back Together Again. So she stops it off, she starts playing, the band comes in, and they wave me on stage. So it was all planned.
Uh-huh.
And the only person who didn't know was Roberta. Uh-huh. And so the sound engineer knew I was going to use the flute mic. He had it already set. So played it, and then they were like, take a solo. I started soloing, and she got up from the piano, turned around. She was like, the hell is going on? And yeah, so that was my musical introduction to her. And after the show, of course, everybody swarms around Roberta. Because, you know, she's signing autographs and taking pictures with people. And this is before the whole selfie thing, right? So people still had, like, a digital camera.
Yeah.
And they're like, click, click, click. And then so she jumps in the limo to leave. And she winds. I was walking out, and she wound down the window. She signaled for me to come over to the... She shook my hand. She said, thank you for playing this song. We're playing in Connecticut next weekend. I'll see you there. And I was just like, wait a minute. What do you mean?
And you were in college.
I was in college.
Yeah.
And so I went to school that next week, and I figured out a way to get to Connecticut that weekend. And the gig was in Stamford, Connecticut. So I flew to New York, and I found out where the band was meeting to hop on the bus to drive to CT. And so... rode up there, sound check, and old school band, so no sheet music, everybody playing by memory. I don't even know what the set list is. I don't any. She never tells us the set list, so you just have to figure it out.
So had you learned her music before?
Little bit of it, and anyway, so at that sound check, Ralph McDonald showed up. Because he lived in Stamford, Connecticut, and he produced so many of her records and wrote songs. I mean, he wrote Where's the Love for her and Donny Hathaway. And so he, and then his parents were from Trinidad.
Right, so, that's right.
So he took myself and Arturo out to dinner after something. He's like, come on, don't forget about that backstage food. Come, let's go. So he took us to this Korean restaurant very near to the theater. And it was my first time eating Korean food. Country bumpkin.
And, you were in college, buddy.
And then he took us back to his house, showed us all his Grammys and his gold records everywhere. And, you know, we had a nice hang real quick, and then we rushed back to go do the gig. And we swapped contact. He said, keep in touch on that, you know, and between those two, then after that gig, Roberta's like, we're playing in Florida next weekend.
Did they ever pay you at any point?
Yeah. She started paying me. Yeah, she's okay.
That's good. I mean, sometimes it's like, hey, we'll see you, you know.
Yeah, you know, that famous Al Blakey story, right? It's like.
Which one of many?
The famous one. Can't remember the trumpet player's name. I mean, I do, but I'll leave it out. Uh-huh. It'll be on the radio. But he's playing with Al Blakey, and it's like, you know, second week of the tour. And he says, you know, Mr. Blakey, you know, I'm trying to figure out what's going on with me getting paid. And Blakey said, paid? I thought you were sitting in. And so.
Oh, Bohino.
Bohino was classic. You know, the other one is Bohino. Man, you know, I was walking down the street, man, and, you know, I had my money in this pocket, and I had your money in this pocket, and these guys jumped me, and they took all your money.
Yeah, those stories, got robbed. Oh, goodness gracious. Oh, you're making me laugh. So let's go back to, so when you came to New York, you started working with Ralph McDonald, right? A recording with him?
Yeah, first day in the city.
Yeah.
I got to New York on August 24th, 2006. August 25th, I called Ralph and said, yo, I just made it to New York. I'm living here now. He said, all right, cool. We're in the studio tomorrow. Bring your trumpet, bring your quattro. I was like, okay. And that it was at Avatar Studios. And Buddy Williams was on drums, Will Lee was on bass, Dave Spinoza on guitar, Rob Mounsey on keys, Elliot Shiner behind the board, and Ralph on percussion. And we were recording the band tracks for what became his album Mixed Emotions. It was something else, man, hell of a session. And then, you know, Will Lee was telling all the stories. Everybody has all these stories. So Will Lee's telling all these stories about playing with Carly Simon. And Dave Spinoza is telling all these stories about Aretha Franklin. And I'm just like,
isn't that something?
Buddy Williams is telling all these stories about, you know, everybody. Like, you know, he started playing with Valerie Simpson when he was 16. You know, he was still in high school. And he started, everybody telling all these, Ralph is telling all these Roberta stories. And I'm just sitting there like, wow.
Yeah.
What am I doing here?
Right.
You know, and then Buddy was like, hey, you know, I had known Buddy because we did a gig in Barbados together with Arturo. And he was like, yo, write your number down. Go join the union tomorrow.
Okay.
And so I went and joined the union. And I started getting called. He gave Kamau Adlifu my number.
Uh-huh.
And I started doing subbing on Color Purple on Broadway. And so, you know, it was, I was like, wow, you know.
That's a wow. Well, let's go back to how you even got interested in playing jazz. I mean, because you grew up in Trinidad.
Yeah, I grew up in Trinidad playing all kinds of music, right? Playing in a steel band, playing in a brass band. And there's all kinds of music around. Jazz wasn't really popular in Trinidad then. It's kind of like a niche market thing in Trinidad. Like, so people basically, at that time, it was people who had lived or studied abroad, normally in New York or Toronto or London or Paris, and they came back to them. They would have a jazz record collection or whatnot, and they would have a few concerts, but I was never privy to them whenever again to go, and they didn't have the only jazz record you'd see in the stores back then when they used to sell music in stores would be like Kenny G and, you know. And so I started really checking out the music after I graduated high school. I remember I started checking Oscar Peterson. And then when I got to Florida State and started studying there, that's when the album that hooked me was Blue Train by John Coltrane.
Uh-huh.
First time I heard Lee Morgan's trumpet on that album. I had a Lee Morgan album from before, Sidewinder. And I had an Eric Dolphy album, Out to Lunch. But when I heard Lee on Blue Train, that hit it out of the park. Then the next album that hooked me right after that was Stolen Moments from Blues and the Abstract Truth by Oliver Nelson, Freddie Hubbard on trumpet. And then from there, and listening to Roy Haynes on drums, and then finding out that Roy Haynes was Bajan American. And you know, bit by bit, you know, eventually, like, the circle of the diaspora just started getting drawn and seeing that, you know, so many of these people on these records were Caribbean Americans. So that, you know, I was like, wow, well they're from the Caribbean and I'm from the Caribbean, so I can do this too. It was just constant study, a lot of
But did you go to Florida specifically to study jazz or just...
I went to study music.
I see.
And, discovered and really started digging. I didn't know anything about jazz, really, like... I looked at a picture of Dizzy Gillespie and said Miles Davis. Like, I didn't know.
Yeah.
You know, and ignorance is ignorance. You just don't know, right?
Right.
And if somebody don't show you or teach you, you're still gonna not know. I was lucky enough to have a very nurturing group of friends, colleagues, and faculty mentors at Florida State University, which I'm extremely grateful for.
Right.
Leon Anderson, Rodney Jordan, Marcus Roberts, Scotty Barnhart, Bill Peterson, Bill Kennedy, Brian Gable were very, very instrumental in kind of shaping, you know, basically they put me on course.
Yeah.
They were like, this is what you need to be listening to.
Yeah.
These are the people you need to be checking out. Go learn every single note that Lee Morgan plays. Go learn every single note that Clifford Brown plays. Go learn every single note that Freddie Hubbard plays. Go learn every single note that Louis Armstrong plays. Note for note, understand why. And yeah, it was 4 years of really intense, you know, because I was playing catch up.
Right, right.
To all my friends who studied it all through high school and
right.
Med school.
So now that you're a professor, assistant professor, are you teaching the same, passing the same lessons that were given to you? Are you passing this down, or is it just a different time?
Well, it's a different time, and my students definitely come in with way more skills than I had when I was at their age in college.
I see.
In terms of, one, their abilities on the instrument, and two, their knowledge of the genre.
Mm.
And so, but I teach them about the lineage.
Mm-hmm.
So the first trumpet solo every one of my students has to learn is Joking Oliver King Porter Stomp. Full stop.
Mm.
That is the first solo you have to learn. Soup doop 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 doop. Because it teaches you that at the core, this is a bouncing music. Like, you have to be able to groove. And it's actually a challenge because he's playing nonstop for 3.5 minutes, you know. And so I teach them, you know, that they have to learn. A lot of students come in and they want to learn about Freddie Hubbard. They want to learn about Clifford Brown. They want to learn Woody Shaw solos. And that's great. And we'll get there. But before we get to that, you have to understand that they were coming out of a tradition that came out of Louis Armstrong.
Well, you know,
Joe Oliver.
That's a conversation that I seem to have often the last year or so about a lot of young people's lack of curiosity or desire to go back. And I see that there's a quote from Marcus Roberts, going backwards is, he told you, going backwards is the only way to go forward.
Oh, it's true.
Yeah,
very true.
I agree with you.
You know,
I agree with him, actually.
You know, I follow this mantra very closely, is that success, progress is 2 steps forward, 1 step backward. And you repeat that because you do 2 steps forward. And then for me, the step backward is more research, more learning of what has happened. Because if you know, you could easily try to reinvent the wheel if you don't know that the wheel was ever invented.
Right, right, right.
You know, you could easily write King Porter Stomp if you didn't know that Jelly Roll Morton wrote it.
Right.
You might wake up one morning, and I never forget when I was like 18, right after high school, and I was sitting at home and I was practicing this. I was kind of making up an exercise, and I went, man, that's cool. Yeah, I come up with something hip. And then I was 2 years later, I'm at Florida State, and I'm listening to Wynton Marsalis record, and this is the, and I was like, so I did not invent the wheel. See?
Right.
But you
right.
have, if you don't know, you don't know.
Right, but you could also admit that to yourself, because some people may not. Well, speaking of going back, you're on one of Eric Reed's Monk recordings of Baddest Monk. We're going to listen to you on Rhythmining from Eric Reed on WBJO Newark. He's at ATN Charles. I'm Sheila Anderson, and this is WBGO. Eric Reed on WBGO Newark, 88.3 FM, WBGO.org. Online, Eric Reed, the baddest monk in rhythmining, featuring my guest this morning, ATN Charles, on trumpet. So in the few minutes that we have left, see how it goes fast, doesn't it?
It flies by.
Five flies by. We're going to close out with Dom Lorraine.
Dom Lorraine.
Yes, but before you tell us about the song, what do you have going? What's happening in your musical world the next few months?
Yeah, we're touring in support of the album. You know, we're lucky enough to be able to get to travel and play this music and tell people the stories and introduce people to a world that they may not be familiar with, you know, in terms of the world that informs the sounds that make Trinidad's Carnival what it is. And also kind of to highlight for the Caribbean people who live in America to remind them of what's going on at home. And so we're going to be, like, I'm in Atlanta on... I'm doing a residency at Georgia State University next week. And after that, we do St. Lucia Jazz Festival in May. Then I go do an outreach residency in Trinidad. We play at Kaiso Blues Cafe. And then and then I go to Europe with SF Jazz Collective. We do a week, 2 weeks in France. Come back, we do Ann Arbor, Michigan. Ann Arbor, and then I go to Chicago. And then I'm just running all over the place. June.
And don't forget, you have the Newark Museum.
Newark Museum, August 1st.
I didn't give you the agreement yet, but it's in the mail.
It's August 1st. August 1st. August 1st. That's actually Emancipation Day in Trinidad. That was the day that the Emancipation Proclamation was signed in Trinidad and Tobago.
Is that right?
August 1st, 1834. Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. Perfect. Yeah. Yes. So, ladies and gentlemen, ATN is... one of the musicians, Jazz in the Garden series this summer. Again, he's August 1st. That is so cool. I'm glad you told me that. We'll maybe use it in the marketing, in the press release.
We'll see.
I'll at least put it out there for them. That is so fantastic. So, again, talk about, again, your new CD is Carnival Sounds of a People, Volume 1. And before we close out, just talk a little more about the song Dom Lorraine. So who was she?
Dom Lorraine is originally Dom Lorraine was a play.
Ah, a play?
It was a play in three acts that was always done on Carnival Sunday night. And the first part of the play was about the French bourgeoisie, which is the planter class, making, like, they would be mocking the French aristocracy. So the aristocracy would be living in France, but they would have the bourgeoisie running the plantations for them in the Caribbean, in Trinidad and Martinique and Guadeloupe and Dominique, etc. And so they would mock the aristocracy. You know, they would walk around a certain way. And then the second act in the play is this is a classroom scene where there's a class master, a schoolmaster, and then there are all these students. And that scene is to mimic the actual enslavement. So the schoolmaster is the overseer, and the students are the enslaved, and they're giving trouble, and they're fighting, and they're causing trouble. And then the next scene is kind of like this. It's almost like a Twilight Zone almost, where you have these people with these really exaggerated body parts. So on one of them is this woman, Madame Jal Rouge, who is very voluptuous, overtly voluptuous, top and bottom, and dances in a certain way. And so over the years, I mean, Dom Lorraine is one of the oldest traditions of Carnival. And at the end of the Dom Lorraine play, that's the beginning of Carnival. That's Juve morning. And so Dom Lorraine, over the years, has come to refer to this woman, Madame Jal Rouge. Because there were all these different characters, and that one that stuck in everybody's head over all the years is this woman, Dom Lorraine. And if you Google Dom Lorraine Trinidad, you'll see a whole bunch of videos and a whole bunch of pictures. And it's like, you know, normally a dress, it's normally a mask, a hat, an umbrella, and there's a certain dance that happens where you shake your bump or shake your rump. And so I wanted to write a tune that kind of showcased that movement of just shaking your hips and dance in a very suggestive way. And so that's what this piece is for me.
Now, has the this kind of knowledge and history been passed down over the years, or has Carnival just become just an event? And
it's both. Yeah. I mean, it has been passed down to some people, and it has not been passed down to some people. You know, Carnival is what it is for whoever takes part in it, and for some people it's this, and for some people it's that. And so, you know, the reason I did this album is because I wanted to make sure that I had a way of making a statement of how important it is for me as a musician to understand this tradition.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've done a great job in bridging it, and you know, jazz is an amalgam, right, of all different musics, and I think you said something about jazz. I wrote it down somewhere, but now I can't see where I wrote it. You said jazz is Creole music.
It is.
And that is meaning.
Yeah, Creole music is the music of the New World. It's a music that has many influences from many different places, and you can kind of see where some people can see where the lines are, but then sometimes what you think is a line is not a line. Sometimes what you think is a river is actually a bridge. And so, you know, it's a music for everybody.
Right. Well, it's been great having you here. We're going to actually start out the 1 o'clock hour with Dom Lorraine. And since it's queued up, I don't want to, and we've been talking about it, I don't want to not let anyone hear it. It's a great song. Again, ATN Charles, you've been a wonderful guest. And
thank you for having me.
I'm so glad we finally had it. Made it happen. And you've been listening to WBGO Newark, 88.3 FM, Salon Sessions, and WBGO.
Happy Easter, everybody.
Happy Easter, absolutely.